Use your pass to the Globe Theater. Welcome to the Globe Theater, the radio theater playing exclusively to the men and women of the Armed Forces of the United Nations. Here for your entertainment are presented the finest plays selected from outstanding radio dramas. And here to tell you about tonight's play, in the absence of your regular host, Herbert Marshall, is Bill Johnstone. Good evening, everyone. The Gilded Pheasant by Stephen Morehouse Avery is our bill for tonight, and it's a story that should keep you intrigued to the very end. Our stars are Gail Patrick, Jean-Pierre Armand, and Tom Conway. With your permission, I am going to introduce you to the man who can tell you this story. Because, after all, he was the only man who saw the end of it. Now, I don't mean to sound mysterious, but I'm a fellow who believes that names are unimportant. So I'll just introduce him to you as the Englishman.
Thank you, Mr. Wallington. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Before I tell you the story of the Gilded Pheasant, I must disagree ever so slightly with Mr. Wallington. I'm a fellow who believes that names are of the utmost importance. And so I must warn you that I've changed all the names of the people concerned in this tale. The only one that is left is the true name of the inn, the Gilded Pheasant. On the continent somewhere, in a forgotten little cobbled street where the rain is drawing fine black lines across the yellow gold of a corner lamp, a man is peering into the faces of passers-by. Or later, at a table in a tiny dark place, he will look up from his duck and Madeira and start as though he'd seen a ghost. Now you'll wonder why he does this, and so I'll tell you a story. I'll call this man Forrest Winter, who at 39 had, with excellent business judgment, broken his way through Wall Street to a useful fortune. The only wildcat plunge he'd ever taken in his life had been a sudden marriage at 36. Quite frankly, he'd needed a woman, a wife. And all he found in 3 long years of marriage was a doll's face with a wistful half-smile on her lips and a vague wonder-what-it's-all-about look in her gray eyes. He could find no basis for human companionship or conversation. So at last he found, instead, a psychiatrist in a desperate attempt to solve his problem.
So you see, Doctor, what I'm up against. Here is a woman who is utterly devoted to her home and my welfare. Not a single thing for my comfort is too much for her to do. Yet her real self seems always to elude me.
These things happen, Mr. Windsor. They're not unusual. Has she any hobbies?
I can't find anything she's interested in.
Does she listen to you when you talk of your own affairs?
She listens to me whenever I talk, about anything, but she never answers. A monosyllable is an eloquent speech from Marion. She seems to be living in the past. She has no interest in what's going on today.
In that case, Mr. Windsor, I would suggest that somehow you try to recapture some of the past for her. Has she done any traveling?
Oh, yes, she's traveled all over the world, lived for quite a few years on the continent.
Then I would suggest this. Go to Europe and find as many familiar places as you can. It's just possible that this may help lay the ghost of something in the past that might be haunting her. I think you should try that, Mr. Windsor, and at once.
I'll take your advice, Doctor. Thank you. But I think I need that trip more than she does. I'll go, all right, but I'll go alone.
Quite all right, Forrest. You must be tired.
Oh, I'm not at all tired.
Have a hard day at the office?
Usual day. With any mail?
No.
I'd like to make some plans for tomorrow.
Plans?
Yes. It's your birthday. Remember?
Oh, yes.
You know the emerald ring, Marion, the one that was your last birthday present? Supposing I matched it with a bracelet for this birthday.
That would be very nice.
You think you'd like it?
If you would, Forrest, then I'd like it very much.
Well, I like it. So far, so good. At least that's settled. Now, how about dining out tomorrow night?
If you wish.
Where should we go? Colony? 21?
Anywhere.
Good Lord, can't you ever have an idea of your own?
It sounds like a very nice plan, dear.
Look, Marion, it's just possible that we both need some sort of a change. I think we'd better go out of here for a while. At least I'd better go out. I'd like to go to Europe for 6 months.
I think a change might be good for me, too.
Frankly, I don't think you're well enough to go. Besides that, Europe's an old story to you. There are any number of reasons.
Forrest, I'll go with you.
When Forrest Windsor told me something of his story, he said that sitting next to Marion on the deck of a luxury liner, he found that up to now at least, there was very little difference between 3 years of it at home and 3 days of it at sea. Warm enough?
Yes, thank you.
How about a little swim before lunch?
No, thank you, Forrest. I think I'll just stay here on deck.
It's lovely, isn't it? We'll do it at Algiers tomorrow morning. Would you like to go ashore?
If you would, Forrest.
If I would. Always if I would. At least it will relieve this monotony. I think I'll have a swim if you don't mind.
Yes, why don't you?
So you won't come?
No, I'll just stay here.
And think?
And think.
How about that necklace?
It's very pretty.
It's very much like Algiers. Would you like it?
Do you like it, Forrest?
I like it very much. But you're the one who has to wear it, for heaven's sake. Do you want it or don't you? I have a car waiting for us. I thought it would be pleasant to drive to Paris.
That sounds lovely.
If we feel like it, we can stop off on the way. You know this country like a book. If you have any suggestions.
No, it sounds as though you planned it beautifully.
Isn't there some place we might stop on the way through?
Tours is attractive.
Well, I'm a success, a suggestion, and from you. We stopped at Tours.
So Tours it was. But to Forrest Windsor, the atmosphere was disturbingly like that of Central Park West in the city of New York. Even Europe wasn't enough of a change. They went for a drive one day in Tours, just to relieve the monotony. And as their horse-drawn carriage rolled along the Rue Nationale, their accustomed silence lay heavily between them. Marion, calm, beautiful, and composed.
Shall we go back to the hotel, Marion?
I'm sorry, dear. I didn't hear you.
I said, shall we go back to the hotel? Or what about the Universe or the Lyonnaise for dinner?
They're both very good, Forrest.
Very kind of you to agree. I thought at least you knew France, Marion, but you really have the mind of a tourist.
All right, then. We won't dine there. Not at any of them. Tell the driver the Faison Dorée.
Faison Dorée, the Gilded Pheasant. It was there that night that I saw Marion Windsor for the first time. My friend and I, you'll forgive me if I don't tell you his name, he permitted himself to be called Pietro, which is as good a name as any. As I was saying, we were dining in that old room. It was a place where, suddenly in a small, stone-fagged courtyard, one found himself completely out of his own century. The dining room was long and narrow, and not large. There were wall mirrors, reflecting here and there an unbelievable somberness of red and gold. At our table, my friend was sitting facing the wall mirror in front of him, in which was reflected the rest of the room, with all its occupants. When Windsor and his wife entered, they were shown directly to the table behind us. Facing her as I was, I remember wondering immediately what it was that was so arresting about her.
Bonsoir, monsieur et dame.
Good evening. A vermouth, please. Marion, what will you have?
Madame may prefer a vermouth cassis.
Marion, did you hear?
Yes, dear, I heard. I think the vermouth, please.
Very good, madame.
What is this, anyway? An old man's home? Even the waiters are nighty.
It's a very old place.
Yeah, it gives me the creeps. You've been here before, haven't you?
Yes.
Why didn't you say, let's go to the Gilded Pheasant? I used to love it when I was here before.
I had no idea you might like it.
I don't like it, but I'm perfectly willing to do things once in a while that you might like. If you would let me know what they are. Does the conversation at the next table interest you so much? It does me.
I didn't understand you, Forrest. Yes. What was it you said?
I sense some very pleasant feelings with Americans. I find them naive and charming.
But their real genius, my friend, is their women. No one of us has so much to offer a man.
Your enthusiasm about Americans almost suggests a personal experience. Perhaps you will take me seriously when I tell you that I count all other experiences as nothing. You Democrats are right about one thing. A prince is made of the same flesh and blood as the rest of you.
Oh, don't dangle a skeleton in front of me, Pietro. Tell me the story.
I will. It happened some years ago, when my father's entourage was on the way to Biarritz by motor. There's a little place on the coast, just into France, called Cristobal-sur-Mer. It's a sort of white toy city, where the little promenades are bright with resplendent uniforms of generals and the parasols of ladies. Our party went straight on, but I remained behind. Cristobal fascinated me. One day, while my chauffeur was seeking for my particular brand of cigarette, I decided to walk around the square. And when I returned, sitting in the back of my car, as if she owned it, and the whole world as well, was the lady of whom I shall tell you.
Your servant, mademoiselle, may I drive you somewhere?
Yes, to the police. Or even better, to the Museum of Art, where such presumption as yours should be enshrined on a pedestal.
I have no desire, mademoiselle, either to disturb the local police or to put the art museum into shadow by your presence.
In that case, my advice to you is to get out of Colonel Brackett's car.
It's just possible, mademoiselle, that the military gentleman of whom you speak has not the only car of this kind in all of Europe. This could be my car.
It could be, but it isn't. I must ask you to leave at once.
In reality, it was Colonel Brackett's car.
And who was the lady?
Who is not important. I have much more to tell you of her. Will it not do if I say she was the loveliest woman in the entire world?
As we resume our story, the Englishman and his friend Pietro sit in pleasant reflection at the table in the Gilded Pheasant.
Suppose you were saying she was the loveliest woman in sight.
In the world, I believe I said. You have no right to laugh. What is there to laugh at in a broken heart?
My dear Pietro, I'm laughing at you in such a romantic role. I've always thought it was the one role you avoided.
Call it romance if you must. I call it fate.
All right, then. Your fate has just ordered you out of the car. Did you get out?
At the moment, I was too concerned with hair that was black and red and golden in a dozen lights. And with eyes that were not the eyes of my country women. And with... But I told you she was lovely.
Yes, you did.
I believe I did. If that had been all, well, that would have been all. But at that moment, a group of gay young English people appeared. And while they clambered into the car, she introduced me to them with a Spanish name. This, she said, is Don Pietro Gomero dos Santos. To my utter consternation,
and supreme pleasure, I was whisked high up into the dunes to the white villa of Colonel Brackett. I shall never forget those 2 days. They were the beginning for Beatrice and me. Beatrice was not her name any more than Pietro is mine. So she called me that to the end. I hope, in some reincarnation, I shall be Pietro. If only she may be there.
Marion, you hadn't eaten a thing. You've been listening as hard as I have. Did that story interest you so much?
Frankly, I haven't heard it. Don't you think we'd better go now, Forrest?
Wait. I must say I'd like to hear the end of it. If it has an end, let's have some more coffee.
Very well. But I do think we should leave.
I told you how I met her, and though you do not believe it, I will tell you more. That first evening in the little garden behind Brackett's villa, she put a white rose in my buttonhole and asked...
Pietro, what kind of crystal did you run away from?
A very obscure one.
Why? Wouldn't they let you wear a sword?
No, and I couldn't play the kind of part I wanted to.
What did you want to play?
Sometimes just the part of a man.
What were you playing?
The part of the prince. But I didn't like it, Beatrice.
Yes, I can understand that. All the princes I've ever known have been pretty dull.
Sometimes a prince doesn't want to be dull. Sometimes it's forced on him.
How would you know? Is that what they told you in the comic opera?
Yes, Beatrice. That's what they told me. They told me more than that because it seems they expected a great deal from me. They expect a great many things. I wish you'd let me tell you about them.
Not now, Pietro. Not now, please. Another time, if ever there is another time.
There had to be another time. I couldn't have stood it without seeing her again. But now, I had something to tell my family and my country. I knew I couldn't face Beatrice again until I did what I knew I had to do. I looked at the frantic cables from my family in Biarritz, and then it was that I wrote to them and to the little Dutch princess for whom I had been destined since I was 10 years old. Yes, my friend, such things are arranged when one is born a prince. But Beatrice, by her very existence, had changed all of this. I sealed my letters and went searching for Beatrice. We drove that day far up into the dunes for luncheon, and afterward we walked and looked over the blue bay with its faint reflection of the purple shadow of the Pyrenees. Beatrice had removed her hat, and the wind was in her hair. Beatrice, my darling, I must tell you how very much I love you. More, my dearest, than life itself.
You don't have to say it. I knew it. We've loved each other from the very first moment. I love you too, Pietro.
There are things I have to tell you.
Don't tell me anything. I know who and what you are. I've known it from the beginning, from the very first day. But even if it's true that nothing can come of all this later, what does that matter to now?
I love you more for that. I love your understanding. I love your compassion.
I love you.
But it's not true that nothing can come of this. That's what I want to tell you. There's not a kingdom in the world worth our happiness. I have renounced my heritage.
Pietro, a whole people in 500 years forbid you to do it.
I know that I've done it.
I won't let you do it. You have a duty to a people, Pietro. You must go on as you're destined to go on, content with your duty and with my everlasting love. And now, I want you to go away.
Beatricia, you must listen to me. From the day I was brought into this world, every move I've made has been planned for me by others. My life has been the timetable of a royal railway. I've been held aloof from a world that I might love to be the symbol of my father's people. I could have borne this, my darling, if I had never met you.
I know. And I love you very dearly. But I can't accept the responsibility of betraying the people. Nor will I let you. I'm just as strong as that, Pietro. But not strong enough to bear it if you're with me. You're going to leave me now. I can't stand it if you don't. Goodbye, my dearest.
I don't know how I lived for the next few months. If she couldn't bear to have me with her, I couldn't bear to be away. I followed her from one end of the continent to the other. Until one night, I found her here, in Tours. We came to the Faisan d'Or, this very place, and made a bargain. I promised not to seek her for 5 years. You know what that has done to kingdoms. I am no longer a prince royal. My father's people have done away with kings, and their most ardent republican rejoices in it no more than I. But they have cheated me out of something worth a dozen thrones. Somehow, I have lost her. She may have married. Anything might have happened. And it remains for me to tell her that I was a fool to weigh the rest of the world against 5 minutes with her.
You agreed not to seek her for 5 years. What was her agreement?
That at the end of 5 years to the night, she would meet me here at the Gilded Pheasant. This is the night.
But you would hardly expect her to follow you here into the dining room. Don't you think that perhaps she'd prefer to wait for you outside?
Perhaps. I'm getting late. Will you excuse me? I think I will see if she's outside.
Good luck. I hope she is.
He looks a prince, that man. What a story. Romance. Incidentally, what a woman. Even losing her, he's a luckier man than most I know.
Yes. Don't you think we should go now, Forrest?
Go? I won't move an inch. I want to get a look at a glorious creature like that.
I really must go, Forrest. If you are ready, I think we ought to start. If we are going to go on.
At least wait until I had a chance to see such a woman just once, Marion. Good Lord, aren't you interested in anything?
Yes, I am. But if you'll excuse me, Forrest, I really must go.
Okay, I won't be long.
Waiter?
Oui, monsieur.
Brandy, please.
Tout sweet, monsieur.
I beg your pardon. May I have one of your cigarettes?
Oh, certainly.
Here you are. Thank you. Light. Thanks.
Hey, guess it's the privilege of friends and wives to keep one waiting indefinitely. About time they came back, don't you think?
Possibly. But, do you see that wall mirror behind your back? And the one opposite that faces you?
Yes.
They're very clear and very revealing. Do you think my friend was telling that story to me? No. He was telling that story to a pair of gray eyes. They were in that mirror behind you, directly behind you. No, I don't think it's time they came back. I don't think they will ever come back.
So
so, on the continent somewhere, out here, now there, in a little cobbled street in the rain, Forrest Winsley searching for them. He does not wish to separate or trouble them, but he needs her absolution. He was married to a priceless woman, but he could never find time, nor was it in his heart to learn to understand her. That, if there is one, must be the unpardonable sin.
Fly away. Anyway, you've just heard Gail Patrick, Jean-Pierre Aumont, and Tom Conway in The Gilded Pheasant by Stephen Morehouse Avery, as produced by This Is My Best and presented by the Globe Theater. This is your host, Bill Johnstone, wishing you all good night and good luck. Forces Radio Service.